abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
And welcome, everybody, on this October 15th, 2013. Tom Woods here. The topic today is Sweden. Why is the topic Sweden? Well, you know why. Because you're always hearing the Sweden objection. Right? Sweden's government spends a fortune. Sweden's government offers an extensive welfare state. And Sweden's doing great, and everybody's happy in Sweden. They're prosperous, and everything's robust. And we should follow the Swedish example ourselves. We've heard it a million times. So we're going to be joined in a few minutes by my old friend Per Bieland. He's a professor of economics at Baylor University. Per Bieland is spelled P-E-R. And then B-Y-L-U-N-D. So check him out at PearBieland.com. Before we do that, a couple of items I want to bring to your attention. The first is, somehow, while I was out of town over this weekend, and I'm sorry I neglected to mention this on yesterday's program, but while I was out of town in Las Vegas, somehow the Tom Woods Show hit number two on iTunes under News and Politics. Number one is NPR. So I don't know how they determine this or how many subscribers you need. I think it's updated like an Amazon rank. So if you do really well and then people aren't subscribing as rapidly, then you start falling again. I think it's that sort of thing. But even still, I don't think a lot of programs get up to number two at all, even for a fleeting moment. And we've been pretty high up there ever since the program came out, and I don't understand it. But I do want to thank you guys, because obviously subscriptions and downloads of the program are what has made this possible, and I don't know what to say. I'm just flabbergasted, so thank you guys very much. Don't forget, this coming Saturday, October 19th, for those of you in Raleigh, North Carolina, we've got Nullify Now. I'm going to be the keynote speaker there, along with Mike Church, your favorite host on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. I mentioned this briefly on my Facebook page, and people are saying, hey, I live in Raleigh. I didn't know you were going to be there. These people have not been listening to the Tom Woods Show, where I have been annoying you guys nonstop with my reminders about what's going on in Raleigh on Saturday. So make sure and check that out. You got to get tickets for this thing, but I don't know how much they are. I think they're dirt cheap. They're so cheap, you're just going to hold the price in contempt. So that's Raleigh, and you can check that out, nullifynow.com. Don't forget, those of you in the Cincinnati area, I'd sure love to see you guys at Miami University in Ohio, November 11th at 7 p.m. The logistical details are up on my events page, tomwoods.com/events. I've been to Cincinnati to speak a couple times. I've always had a great crowd, wonderful people. And then November 20th, lunchtime, I'm going to be speaking at the St. Louis University School of Law to lawyers about the right of secession. I'm going to need some moral support, people. So any of you in the St. Louis area who can get away at lunchtime, please show up. The Federalist Society, which is sponsoring the event, usually offers a free lunch if you show up. So there's that, too. And then in the afternoon, I'll be in St. Charles, Missouri, also November 20th, at Lindenwood University. And I'm hoping to line up one or two more things before 2013 is out. But that is it for now. And then don't forget, well, I don't know why I'm telling you not to forget it, because I haven't told you. Bob Murphy, your favorite economist, is going to be sort of a semi-regular on here because he's great at answering questions. And so you got more economics questions, let's ask Bob. We'll talk about the Nobel Prize and some stuff in the news, but we can also ask some what we might call evergreen questions that are of general interest. We'll ask him those questions coming up later this week. So make sure and tweet me some questions for Bob. You can tweet me at Thomas E. Woods and ask your question with the hashtag Ask Murphy. Now, apparently, somebody else is using the hashtag Ask Murphy, but great, right? Let's screw with them a little bit, right? Maybe they'll whoever they are, will learn some economics too. So go ahead and do that. And that'll be a lot of fun. One more thing. If you happen to be an audio engineer or knowledgeable in audio, could you maybe drop me a note at tomwoods.com on my personal page? I don't think there's a contact page at tomwoodsradio.com, but tomwoods.com on the contact page, just because I'm sort of my own sound engineer here. And as you notice, the program has gotten a lot better since I moved away from that initial platform. But there's still some tweaks I want to do here, and they're beyond my abilities. Like, I know how to do noise removal. Like, there's a hum, I can get rid of that. I can do basic stuff like that. But I'm still coming up against a problem that is just beyond my abilities, and I could certainly use a quick consult with somebody. I would be very grateful for that. And finally, if you are enjoying the program and you're thinking, what can I do to give back, to give something back? Well, you don't have to do anything. But when you're going to buy that plasma TV on Amazon, don't forget to enter Amazon at tomwoodsradio.com, where at no cost to you, you can, well, help keep the lights on, help me in this office where I'm able to record and make this program. So I'd certainly appreciate that. And also, of course, do me a favor and check out my libertyclassroom.com, which is the product of many hundreds of hours of effort. And we've got 8 courses, a 9th one coming soon. These are all courses you can listen to in your car. One ridiculously low fee gets you everything we have, plus a year's worth of all the questions you want to ask of all our faculty. So check out libertyclassroom.com, either for yourself or for somebody in your family, some student and who's being thrown to the wolves in college and who could use a lifeline to us. Libertyclassroom.com is just the ticket. And of course, with coupon code SHOW in all caps, you always get a discount. All right, we're going to turn now to our good friend, Per Bieland. Per Bieland is a research professor in the Department of Management and Entrepreneurship at Baylor University's Hankamer School of Business and the John F. Bau Center for Entrepreneurship and Free Enterprise. Among other things, he wrote a chapter, he contributed a chapter to a book I released a couple years ago called Back on the Road to Serfdom. And in that chapter on Back on the Road to Serfdom, Per talked about Sweden. And that's what we're going to talk to him about today. Per Bieland, thanks so much for being with me today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Now, this topic comes up all the time. The issue of Sweden comes up all the time. And when I posted on Facebook that today I would be talking about this subject, people are saying, thank goodness, I mean, all my friends are hitting me over the head with Sweden, and I don't know what to say to them. So what I want to do with you today is to take this apart piece by piece. There are a lot of different things we can talk about. We talk about the history of Sweden before the big expansion of the welfare state. We can talk about the consequences of the welfare state. We can talk about recent policies. We can talk about the financial crisis. We can talk about moral and cultural effects of the welfare state, all of which you've written about. And I mentioned in the introduction the chapter you did for my Back on the Road to Serfdom about all this, which is very valuable. But what I want to do before doing any of that is I want to ask you, what in 2001 and 2002, what were the walks for capitalism in Stockholm? Can you just tell us about that before we get into the nitty-gritty here?
Well, certainly. The walks for capitalism was some sort of event celebrating the free market organized by a guy in Australia, I think. These manifestations were held all over the world, started first year with 80 cities all over the world, and I was the organizer for the Stockholm manifestation. And of course, since the guy organizing this was based in Australia, he figured December would be a really good date because it's in the middle of the summer and everything. So, of course, we had to march for capitalism in the middle of a blizzard both the years that I organized this thing. But what we did was basically get people together, show support for the free market and capitalism. We had some speakers there, people chanting, trying to stay warm, basically.
Okay.
And I think the first year we managed to get 500 people out in the streets.
Oh, that is
a decent crowd.
That's very, very hard to do under any circumstances on any subject. So to march for capitalism in a blizzard in Sweden is really saying something. Now, if I may, again, just start off with something a little bit personal. You don't have to answer this, I suppose. I could always edit it out. We'll pretend it was never even asked. But I am curious because, of course, you've lived in the United States for a number of years now. You were getting your PhD at the University of Missouri, and now you're a professor at Baylor University. I notice you're not living in Sweden right now. What made you decide to move to the United States?
Well, I always wanted to move to the United States. Maybe I bought into the myth of the land of the free and all this stuff, just like everybody's buying into the myth of Sweden being this socialist utopia. But you know, there's something about America that I just love. And that's why I'm here, and that's why my wife is here as well.
All right, now that we've got the preliminaries out of the way, let's dive right into this. What most people think they know about Sweden is as follows. Sweden has a very substantial welfare state, an incredible amount of government spending, very high taxes, and the results have been pretty good, that the Swedish economy has been fairly robust. And if you do polls of the people in Sweden, they seem fairly happy with things. They have no apparent desire for any serious changes. So why would you, how can you take a different view from this? I mean, how do you dissent from this? On what grounds do you dissent from this? And secondly, doesn't this demonstrate that our claims about the free market must be overblown if this level of government intervention is yielding you still a more or less livable society?
Well, sure. I mean, first I would correct you and say that what most people know about Sweden would probably be ABBA and the Swedish bikini team.
Well, that's true.
But the welfare state would be third. I would say there's a lot of propaganda, and this propaganda is actually, it's very hard to get rid of it because Swedes too believe in the myth. And I think that the reason this myth is so hard to kill is that Sweden actually did work very well for decades as a fast increasing, rapidly increasing welfare state. And the reason for that was simply that there was enormous economic growth due to the free market that was actually existent in Sweden back then. So there is a lot of history that actually supports this myth. It has probably nothing at all to do with what Sweden is like today, or what Sweden was like 30 years ago.
So, in other words, what happened is that Sweden had a relatively free market, and this builds up a lot of wealth, and then in establishing this welfare state, it then squanders all this, and then as you're squandering things, squandering is another way of saying spending a lot, and that would give the impression that things are going really well. But what's been happening, let's say, over the past 20 or even 30 years in Sweden, by contrast?
Well, Sweden had its own depression in the early 90s, simply because in the 70s, with the economic crisis back then, Sweden ran out of money. There was no more world wars to tap into, because Sweden was not part of World War I or World War II. But as a small country in the middle of Europe, it could easily export everything that was produced. So we actually tapped into the world wars and all the destruction of those wars. And by the 70s, with the economic crisis, there was really no reason for Sweden to experience greater growth than any other country. So what they did was they tried to increase exports, because that's the only thing that Sweden could actually do to get more wealth, basically. And they did that through writing down the exchange value of the Swedish currency, and they did that a number of times during the 70s by 10 and 16% and so forth. And that didn't really work. And then in the early 90s, in 92, there was a lot of speculation against the Swedish currency as part of other such speculations as well, against the British pound and in Portugal and so forth. But Sweden could not stand against this sort of speculation, so they had to let it go. And then it was obvious that Sweden was in really bad shape, with high national debt, really, really high taxes, no economic growth. There was basically no economic growth at all, except for in the public sector during the 80s. So what has been going on since then is that all parties in the parliament, they agreed that they needed to cut back on the welfare state, and that has been going on since 92.
Well, to what extent? I mean, do people notice the cutbacks, or are they American style cutbacks, which means no cutbacks at all?
Well, there are cutbacks. Basically, most of these cutbacks are
are due to enforcing and introducing limits to the social welfare system. So before 92, there was basically no limit to how long you could live off of the public sector and government subsidies. But now you cannot go on unemployment, for instance, longer than, I think it is 300 days. That was basically unlimited before. Now there are actually some checks and controls before you get handouts. That was not the case before. So there are some very obvious differences for people living in Sweden. I don't think they have noticed the major differences or the real change in how the system actually works. And that's probably because the Social Democratic Party that has ruled Sweden for 80 years or so, they were the ones doing the cutbacks. And then it is legitimate for anyone who loves the welfare state, since it's the Social Democrats doing the cutbacks.
Well, what about unemployment itself? What have unemployment rates been like in Sweden? I mean, what are they like now, or what have they? When did they peak? I mean, have there been any disemployment effects of any of these social welfare policies, as far as you can see?
Well, that's really hard to say, because right now, of course, unemployment is really high. And the reason for that is the financial crisis. Sweden has actually been one of the strongest countries out of the financial crisis these recent years, probably because we dealt with our own crisis in the early 90s. So the national debt went down from 80% of GDP to 35% of GDP in only 15 years. Not so much because we paid it off, but because we stopped borrowing. And we had economic growth. Unemployment, Sweden has not really recovered since the early 90s in terms of unemployment. And now I think the official numbers are something like 25% for young people, and could it be around 12% or so for everybody, which is not a lot comparing it to other countries in Europe right now, like Greece and
right.
Portugal and Spain, but it's still really, really high.
Well, the data you're talking about, though, raises a key epistemological question for economists, because suppose we saw youth unemployment at 25% in 1977, let's say, at the height of the Swedish welfare state, and the general run of the population hitting 12% unemployment, surely we would be inclined to say, well, this just goes to show the difficulties of the welfare state. But over the past 20 years, when there has been at least a modest attempt to try to privatize, deregulate, lower spending, when we see, at least in these financial crisis years, unemployment be so high, we're inclined to say, well, that's because government is still too big. But it's easy to imagine how somebody who disagrees with our point of view might look at these statistics and tell another story.
Right. I think that is true. And I think that is one thing that the current government is actually struggling with a little bit, because the Social Democrats have been experts at hiding people from the statistics. We saw earlier, prior to 2006, we saw a lot of people who were 25 years old and had retired. The reason for that was that they were in early retirement because they could not get a job. So the government basically took them off the books and placed them in retirement. That does not go on anymore, which means that people actually show up in the statistics. And since the early 2000s, there's a non-socialist coalition of parties in power, and they are trying to get people into the books, and they are struggling simply because there is a financial crisis, and there are a lot of people who are hidden simply because they're put in all these programs that they're trying to get rid of. And that pushes unemployment rates up, obviously.
Now, you've written a little bit about what you're calling Sweden's Great Depression. You're talking about the problems in the 1990s that Sweden had. And as happens in the United States, the blame was placed on so-called deregulation. But you found rather a different explanation, one more in line with the Austrian theory of the business cycle, to account for why Sweden had the problems of the early 1990s. So why don't you say a little something about that?
Well, it certainly looks that way. We're in the middle of
of a research project right now that I'm doing with two guys in Sweden, looking into what actually caused the crisis. And there was a fair amount of deregulation prior to the crisis. There's no doubt about that. But it also seems that the Swedish central bank, well, basically printed a lot of money prior to the big crisis. It seems like Sweden is a really good case for exemplifying the Austrian business cycle theory. We haven't really gotten to see all the details yet in this research project, but it looks very promising.
So the Austrian business cycle theory is familiar to almost everybody listening, but just in case, why don't you take 60 seconds to give people the Reader's Digest version, if I may use an American colloquialism.
So the Austrian business cycle theory says that when government or banks create more money and increases the credit in the market, that means that you will get a lot of malinvestments and people, entrepreneurs, investing in projects which should never have seen the light of day, basically. And since they are investing at earlier prices, they're investing as if all the capital goods are actually out there, but they're not. And sooner or later, they're going to see how much there actually is, and they're going to figure out that all these projects cannot be completed. And then the market will see a lot of bankruptcies. And it's really a theory of the unsustainable boom that is caused by increasing and or expanding the credit. And this is exactly what we saw that happened in Sweden in the late 80s, prior to the depression in the early 90s.
Now, if you had to, I suppose you were giving an opening statement in a debate, and they're giving you 90 seconds for your opening statement, and you're debating the proposition, the Swedish welfare state demonstrates the viability of a third way between capitalism and socialism, and you are arguing in the negative. How would you do that? Ready? Go.
Well, that's not an easy question, because it...
No, the best debates never are.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but 90 seconds, I'm more of the long essay type of guy.
That'll make it more fun.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's a fair amount of luck going on in Sweden. Throughout the first 100 years, there's a scholar at Lund University in Sweden, Andreas Berg, who's written a book on the capitalist welfare state, showing how there was basically a century of fairly good markets with good market institutions, and the government never interfered with that. So
can you give dates about
a third way...
Hang on just a second. Can you tell us the date? What are the dates of this century that you're talking about?
Sure. It's 1870 through 1970.
Okay.
So it was basically up to the economic crisis in the 70s. There really is no third way or a middle ground or anything like that in Sweden. By first having a very free market and enjoying the growth of this free market, the government could expand and actually did expand very quickly, but always less than the growth in the market. And they always left these capitalist institutions unharmed and untainted until the 70s. So what we see is really that it was a market society with a layer of welfare state on top. Now, granted, it is more like a wet blanket, but this blanket was not very thick. They made sure that this blanket was always thinner than the growth that the market created, which meant that it could actually be sustainable for a while until the 70s crisis. Because that's when the welfare state suddenly increased very rapidly and there was no more economic growth. And that's when we finally saw the real effects of the welfare state.
Now, I'm putting up a resource page. I do this sometimes when I make a YouTube video and mm-hmm. I don't have time to cover every detail. So I make a page with articles and resources for people who want more information. So I'm going to do one for Sweden. And so anybody who wants to know a little bit more about this with statistics and stuff, it's going to be libertyclassroom.com/Sweden, and there you'll have some links that will be of interest to you. But there's a paper that was written in the UK last year. I don't have the researcher's name in front of me right now, but I'll have that up on that resource page. And this person is saying that a lot of the favorable outcomes that people associate with the Swedish welfare state, in fact, either predate that or, for example, high levels of equality in Swedish society and various other favorable mm-hmm. social outcomes, these were evident before you had the extensive welfare state. Or descendants of Swedes who came to the United States in the 19th century also are characterized by favorable social outcomes like a low poverty rate and low unemployment. So, in other words, the Swedes seem to prosper no matter where they go, no matter what the circumstances are. So it doesn't seem to be right to say the Swedes prosper because they had this big welfare state, because they seem to prosper anywhere. Well, then there are also the sort of moral and cultural effects of the welfare state that I know you've written about a little bit, that you can't quantify or capture in any numbers. But I read, you know, this piece that you wrote, I think, conveyed this very vividly. So maybe we might close with any reflection you have on that type of issue.
Right. And I think people do what they have an incentive to do. And it, unless they have to work hard, and if they can rely on others, they will, and they will learn how to. So if they grow up and everything they learn is from a welfare state for generations, which is the case in Sweden, you will kind of lose the ability to think of yourself as the only person you rely on. And I think we're seeing that in Sweden right now, where everybody is just requesting assistance from everybody else, but no one is actually assisting anyone. I think that can be pushed back, and I think that is actually what is going on in Sweden right now as well, ethically. So with the cutbacks, and actually we have seen the last 5 or 8 years in Sweden, we've seen a lot of tax cuts, and I mean real tax cuts, not just cuts in the rate of increase. And people are learning to take care of themselves again. So yeah, there's definitely an ethical or moral dimension to the welfare state. If you have a nanny state, people will stop taking care of themselves. They will stop looking out for each other, and they will just wait for big mom, the government, to help them out. And that, of course, means that all of the market will just stop, and it will be a horrible society. So sooner or later, it will implode. And I think that is basically what Sweden did in the early 90s. So you have to recover.
All right. Well, Per Bieland, I appreciate your time. This will help, I think, some of our listeners to navigate this Sweden thicket when they find themselves confronted with it. So I appreciate your time, and best of luck on your research.
Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. That's all the time we have for the program. I need questions for Bob Murphy, for economist Bob Murphy. So anything that you don't understand or you wish could be explained better, or you feel like everybody takes for granted that you know it, but you don't, well, this is the time to get those questions off your chest. Ask me those questions by getting on Twitter. Join Twitter just to ask the questions, even if you never want to tweet ever again. Tweet the questions to me at Thomas E. Woods with the hashtag AskMurphy, and I'll see how many of those questions I can fit into the program later this week. Also, check out our resource page on Sweden, libertyclassroom.com/Sweden. And while you're there, look around at libertyclassroom.com, where you can learn the history and economics they didn't teach you. That's it. Till tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for listening.
The Tom Woods Show.